Prabhupada ki. Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki. Gadantara Shrimad Bhagavatam ki. Giriraj Maharaj ki. Joy Nitoi Gopremonundi. So tonight we'll begin chapter 9 of Canto 9. Your open book exam topics are due tonight. If they come in later, you'll start losing marks. Your oral presentation is also due today. If your facilitator, Ananda Balava, he said he couldn't facilitate all of them, couldn't line them up. So if you come to me and explain why, then you can have some extra time in your oral presentations. But the open books are due tonight. So we'll continue with chapter 9 of Canto 9. Shukadev Goswami continued, King Amshuman, like his grandfather, performed austerities for a very long time. Nonetheless, he could not bring the Ganges to this material world, and thereafter, in due course of time, he died. Like Amshuman himself, Dilipa, his son, was unable to bring the Ganges to this material world, and he also became a victim of death in due course of time. Then Dilipa's son, Bhagiratha, performed very severe austerities to bring the Ganges to this material world. A little bit late, Jumuna. Thereafter, Mother Ganges appeared before King Bhagiratha and said, I am very much satisfied with your austerities and am now prepared to give you benedictions as you desire. Being thus addressed by Ganga Devi, Mother Ganges, the king bowed his head before her and explained his desire. Would have a bundle if you'd like to read that. Purport.
The king's desire was to deliver his forefathers, who had been burnt to ashes because of disrespecting Kapilamuni.
So what are the points here? Says you have to do austerities to deliver your parents, Brenda. Are you doing that? Huh? Oh. Okay. Any other points?
Duty of the king. So he not only delivers the fathers, he generally takes care of delivering the whole his citizens and subjects. So here we can see how the whole dynasty is still looking after their uncles.
Anything else? So, you can't come this late. It's too late. Why do you come this late? You know the class starts. You know what time it starts, and you come late. So why do you do that? It's disrespectful. You can't advance in Krishna consciousness if you act like this. So, from the previous chapter, we saw why were the sons burned to ashes. Yeah, because they were offenders. They committed Vaishnava Aparad. Because they saw Lord Kapila, or actually Kapila you could say is a incarnation. Then they saw Lord Kapila and they committed offenses towards him. So because of offense, they were burned to ashes. So the Bhagavad Gita continues to reiterate this point, practically in every chapter leading into the 10th canto, that you need to avoid Vaishnava Aparada. So we'll study this subject more clearly this year. We've studied it before, but we'll bring it up again. There are details which are there. If you commit offences, then your bhakti is inhibited. You can't advance fully, and you can't take full advantage of Krishna's mercy as long as you are offensive. So offences can be very subtle. They're not just gross, but they're very subtle. Actually, it's an attitude. Aparada means being slack, or having an indifferent attitude towards Krishna and Krishna's devotees. It's a subtle form of aparada, and it will lead to more serious offences. So one has to be conscientious of developing the proper attitude. The proper attitude is to be a sevak. A sevak means a servant of the devotees. A devotee wants to please the other devotees. He doesn't want to displease the devotees. Rupa Goswami points this out in the Maturi Dal Mahatmya. And it's described that if you commit some offense and you create ill feeling in the heart of the other devotee, even unknowingly, then it will inhibit your advancement in Krishna consciousness. Krishna will restrict his flow of mercy. So we have to be very careful of Vaishnava Aparada. So it's being pointed out again and again and again. And in this chapter it's being mentioned once more. The other point which we can take from this is that Rishabhdeva said in the fifth canto that in order to advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to perform Tapo Divyam. Tapo Divyam means spiritual austerities, or austerity for the pleasure of Krishna. If you do not do austerity for the pleasure of Krishna, austerity means sacrifice, willingly giving up something you do not want to give up, and accepting something you may not want to accept. By doing this, you advance in Krishna consciousness. It's Tapo Divyam. It must be austerity for Krishna's pleasure. Now, because we see Duvasa in the previous section, he performed austerity, he was very powerful, but he was not pleasing to Krishna. The austerity was not meant to give satisfaction to Krishna. The austerity was simply to develop his own mystic power, and that made his heart hard, and therefore he could not act properly towards the soft-hearted Vaishnava, Ambarish Maharaj. So therefore he committed aparad, and he almost lost his life. So therefore, a devotee is very careful about performing austerity for Krishna's pleasure. It must give Krishna satisfaction, that is the measure. If you're not satisfying Krishna, then why are you doing the austerity? Just like the devotees ran, it's in the Lilamrita, and we've told this story, that devotees ran to catch up to Prabhupada. He was walking to the ocean on the Puri beach. So Prabhupada was walking across the hot sand, and the devotees saw Prabhupada was walking to the ocean, so they ran after Prabhupada. And as they were running towards Prabhupada, the sand is hot and they were barefooted because they just ran, they didn't find their shoes. And Prabhupada turned around and when he saw they were walking on the hot sand, he said, there is enough austerity already in Kali Yuga. He said, just by following the four regulative principles, that is enough austerity. You don't need to do this extra austerity, like walking on hot sand. And then Prabhupada emphasized the main austerity we perform in Kali Yuga is to preach or spread Krishna consciousness, to give Krishna consciousness to others. That is our real austerity. That is our sacrifice. So if you do this, then you will please Krishna the most. As Krishna says at the very end of the Bhagavad Gita, one who teaches this knowledge to my devotees, he is very dear to me. So that is the greatest austerity, to give Krishna consciousness to others, to inspire others in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, Tapo Divyam, Brahma Sokyam, Shuddha Sattva, it will take you to the platform of Shuddha Sattva or purification. If you perform austerity for Krishna's pleasure, to the Brahma Sokyam platform, where you'll get spiritual happiness and bliss. Now, that is the result of doing austerity for Krishna's pleasure. So here, austerity is being performed to give Krishna satisfaction, or the Ganga satisfaction. That is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Any points?
Question?
Yes.
devotees subtly discuss it. I mean, on a daily basis, I mean, even if you talk about husband and wife, you're basically offending each other, and things like that.
Really?
They are Vaishnavas and Vaishnavas. How do we, and the fact that we want to get along well with every, each and every devotee all the time, you know, this is different people and different requirements. So we cannot live without association, and we have to sort of avoid certain, you know, how do we balance it?
When we become purified, then we learn how to perform Vaishnava Sadachar, which means proper conduct towards devotees. And so it means you have to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. So when you become advanced, you won't feel that there is so much tension or friction. You know? A sign of not being advanced is that there is tension and friction between the devotees. And sometimes you hear all the devotees are not getting along with their fighting. You know, the best one is when the guru comes, and the god brothers and the god sisters all fighting about the guru. So then what is that? That's neophyte. That's not advanced. That means the purification is not there in consciousness. So when you become more advanced, then you learn to get on with the devotees without... If there's not friction in your relationships with the devotees, it means you're becoming purified. If there is friction, it means you're not so advanced. You're kanishta. Kanishta means like self-centered person. Yeah, you're a devotee, but you're self-centered. Madhya means he's a devotee, but he's more concerned about the others out there. So it means that we're not so advanced. That's what it means. So then we have to work on ourselves. And between the husband and wife also, you know, some friction is there. That cannot be avoided, but in general, there should be proper sadhachara, proper dealing. The other point? Okay. Anything else? Yeah.
We don't want to offend devotees, because sometimes you get treated in a way that wasn't the best for devotees, and you have feelings of gratitude towards them. So, how to deal with
it? Well, the best way to deal with it is Rupa Goswami says, reveal your mind in confidence and inquire confidentially. So if you feel that a devotee has upset you and that pain will not go away, then you should be able to approach the devotee. That's the best. And just humbly say, Prabhu, you know, you said this or you did this and it upset me. And I'm trying to overcome it, but I'm feeling that it's difficult for me. And can I talk to you about it and maybe we can reconcile? So if devotees are mature, one of the problems in Kali Yuga, Kali Yuga is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So people can't even speak to each other. They can't just have a conversation. Because we have differences. That's there. That's natural. The two devotees will have differences. But devotees should be able to sit down and speak about it nicely and reconcile the differences. But what is the symptom of the mode of passion? Symptom of the mode of passion is as soon as someone criticizes you, what do you do? Yeah, immediately you look for fault in the other person. You say, well, what about you? They say, you know, yeah, that's, you know, because I do it sometimes myself. Someone says something to me, and I say, yeah, but what about you? And then as soon as I do that, I remember, the Bhagavatam says that means I'm in the mode of passion. I'm affected by Rajagun. So we're all affected by these lower modes. And other times devotees say something to me, and then I take it properly, and I say, no, that's correct, what they're saying is correct. So that's more sattvagun. So sometimes, because the modes fluctuate throughout the day, so sometimes we're more in mode of passion, so we respond negatively, and mode of goodness means that we respond positively, we take it constructively. A mode of ignorance means you just become angry. Someone says, hey, what about you? And you say, well, what about you? And you get all upset. Does that answer? Yeah. That's the best thing. Devotees should be able to communicate. People in Kali Yuga aren't very good communicators. That's the problem. They have problems with communication. And devotees, because devotees come from contaminated backgrounds, they also have problems with communication. We have to learn to communicate. Any points? Mother Ganges replied, "When I fall from the sky to the surface of the planet Earth, the water will certainly be very forceful. Who will sustain that force? If I am not sustained, I shall pierce the surface of the earth and go down to Rasatala and, the Patala area of the universe. O King, I do not wish to go down to the planet Earth, for there the people in general will bathe in my water to cleanse themselves of the reactions of their sinful deeds. When all these sinful reactions accumulate in me, how shall I become free from them? You must consider this very carefully."
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Sarva Samadha Jaya Vahapa Sarvapaya, Ampat Sarva Padhyam of Shri Amartya. Abandon all the rights of religion and serving one to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear." 18.66. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can accept the reactions of anyone, anyone's sinful deeds, and neutralize them because he is pavitra, pure, like the sun, which is never contaminated by any worldly infection. Tashyam na rasya vibhe sarva pujoyata. Bhagavatam 3.33.29. One who is very powerful is not affected by any sinful reaction. But here we see that Mother Ganga, he is being burdened by the sins of the people in general who would bathe in her waters. This indicates that no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is able to neutralize the reactions of sinful deeds, whether one's own or those of others. Sometimes the spiritual master, after accepting a disciple, must take charge of the disciple's past sinful reactions, and being overloaded, must sometimes suffer, if not fully, then partially, for the sinful acts of the disciple. Every disciple, therefore, must be very careful not to commit sinful activities after the initiation. The poor spiritual master is kind and merciful enough to accept the disciple and partially suffer for the disciple's sinful activities. But Krishna, being merciful to his servants, neutralizes the reaction of sinful deeds for the servants who engage in reaching his glories. Even Mother Ganga feared the sinful reactions of the people in general and was anxious about how she would counteract the burden of these sins.
Any points here? Concerned, that's all. She's just concerned about coming to the material world. The material world's very contaminated. Any other points?
One has to be very responsible when one takes initiation, because if after initiation also you are not able to follow the credibility principles, then we are putting the reactions to your baby.
Anything else? Diksha Guru. Any other points?
And if that person was not, especially about the fourth regulating principle.
means if you take initiation, you have to follow the four regulative principles. If you don't, then the person who recommends you to the guru also gets reactions. What's that? Sometimes. Under this circumstance they can, but not all circumstances. Any other point?
Right now, Ganga is just the Viraja river, no? It has not even come to the heritage annex yet. No? So the Ganga name is given after it comes down, or even then the name is Ganga.
Ganga is an internal personality, an internal river. So, yeah, we call Ganga means in the spiritual world, in Goloka, there is Ganga. She is there, eternally in Goloka. In Navadvip, which is in Goloka, then she's eternally residing there. In Vrindavan, she's eternally residing. There's Manasi Ganga, she's there. So she's eternally residing in the spiritual world. And when she enters this world, then we say she comes like through that. Yeah, like that. But she's eternally residing like that. So the holy Dharma is eternal. So, any other point? In between the material world and the spiritual world.
So after the Brahma Jyoti or before the Brahma Jyoti?
It means it's the causal ocean which Mahavishnu is lying in.
So it must be after the Brahma Jyoti.
It's before it.
Before the Brahma Jyoti.
Yeah. I have a map I can show you later on.
So. After the Brahma Jyoti or before?
Before. See, if you look in the Malwaves, then it's page 39. Any other points?
Mother Ganga is a purifying personality. And she obviously is coming from the lotus feet of the Lord, so how can she be scared of having all the sinful reactions of people?
Prabhupada himself was also in that situation. He was a resident of Goloka who came to this world. But Prabhupada said when he did the Pandal programs in Mumbai and like that, and there were thousands of people. And after the program, Prabhupada would walk through the crowd and they would touch his feet. So then Prabhupada said to the disciples, do not let them touch my feet. And he said, because I get sick from all the reactions like that. So, and that's a pure entity, a pure soul. So Mother Ganga is also concerned like that. She comes into this world, though she is pure, but by touch of the contaminated soul, something can, can affect the person. I mean, it's Prabhupada's body. It doesn't mean his consciousness got affected, but his body could get affected. So they're just being concerned, that's all. Mathura was a contaminated place. So. Any other point? So this is the point that Prabhupada is making. Ultimately, it is Krishna only who can destroy your sinful reactions. Not even Shiva, not even Brahma, not even Guru, none of these personalities. Ultimately, it's only Krishna. So the other personalities, as Prabhupada says, we have to be very careful as a disciple about committing sinful activity, because the sinful activity, that will go to the spiritual master. Even Prabhupada said at one point in time, I think it was it's in the Lilamrita, I think it was 1974, there was one point where Prabhupada says that he was sick. And he said the reason he was sick is because 80% of his leaders were not following their principles properly. So, this is the situation, the guru. It's a great responsibility to be a guru because you take the reactions to some degree of your disciples. And some effect is there or some contamination is there. Only Krishna can destroy the reactions, but the guru is a transparent via medium, which means it's like there's a tunnel which the water passes through. So as the water passes through the tunnel becomes in contact with that water. So similarly, the guru, it's Krishna who destroys the reactions, but they pass through the guru, so to speak, through parampara. So the guru, as the sins pass through, then it can affect the guru. His health can suffer. And Harisori Prabhu will be here in about 3 weeks for the anniversary. Harisori Prabhu said that he traveled with Prabhupada for 15 months, and he said every time that Prabhupada did an initiation ceremony, he got sick the next day. So it affects, because the sin has to go through the disciple, through the guru. Indradyumna Swami also, he says, because he initiates, he has many thousands of disciples, so he says that every time he does initiation, then he gets sick the next day. He gets a fever or something like that. So he says he's just used to it. It's part of what takes place. So it is important that after we take initiation, we follow the principles. So as Jamuna Leela said, don't take initiation if you're not going to follow. It's not necessary for you to take initiation to advance in Krishna consciousness. Initiation helps you advance in Krishna consciousness. And if you do it properly and you follow strictly, you will advance more in Krishna consciousness. But there's no use taking initiation if you're not ready. Otherwise you affect yourself, you affect the guru, it's not necessary. So, any points?
Ganga was the stand that the sinful people will bathe in the waters, and because of that she will get the sinful effects. Some sages and saintly people also bathe in the Ganga. So is she going to get anything good out of that?
That is coming up. Bhagirata said, those who are saintly because of devotional service and are therefore in the renounced order, free from material desires, and who are pure devotees, expert in following the regulative principles mentioned in the Vedas, are always glorious and pure in behavior, and are able to deliver all fallen souls. When such pure devotees bathe in your water, the sinful reactions accumulated from other people will certainly be counteracted. For such devotees always keep in the core of their hearts the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can vanquish all sinful reactions. TK? Yeah? You should be reading before you come to class.
Yesterday was
the
exam.
Oh, Krishna. Oh, Krishna. Okay, Sri Chaitanya.
Mother Ganges is available to everyone for bathing. Therefore, not only the sinful persons bathe in the Ganges water, but in Haridwar and other holy places where the Ganges flow, saintly persons and devotees will also bathe in the water of Ganges. Devotees and saintly persons advance in the renounced order can deliver even the Ganges. The Sikurvanti Tirthani Swanta Kena Dadavira Bhagavatam 130.10. Because saintly devotees always keep the Lord within the core of their hearts, they can perfectly cleanse the holy places of all sinful reactions. Therefore, people in general must always respectfully honor saintly persons. It is ordered that as soon as one sees a Vaishnava or even a sannyasi, one should immediately offer respects to such a holy man. If one forgets to show respect in this way, one must observe a fast for that day. This is a Vedic invention. One must be extremely careful to refrain from committing offenses at the lotus feet of devotee or saintly person.
That's good. So what are the points in the first paragraph?
One should only go to holy place to take association
Anything else?
Another again, Prabhupada is stressing on refraining from the Vaishnava Puran.
Any other points? Anything else?
Devotees of the Lord are so powerful that they have the power to deliver Indian Ganga.
Yeah, so there is unlimited potency in bathing in the Ganga. And Prabhupada actually says in the Bhagavatam, in his purport, he says, the Ganga which is purified 100 times, that is Jamuna. So bathing in Ganga or Jamuna is extremely purifying. It's extremely powerful. And Prabhupada actually says that. He says, every year we preach, and then once a year we should go to the holy dam, we should take bath in the Ganga or the Jamuna and purify our consciousness. So it's extremely powerful. It's one of the items of bhakti, actually, to take bath in the Ganges. You know, it says that we should reside in Mathura, Mathura Vas. So this refers partially to taking bath in Ganges and Jamuna. And now the Indian government have agreed to let the Jamuna flow properly again, because devotees put pressure on the government, because the Jamuna was not flowing properly, is not flowing properly. So to rectify the situation, so Jamuna will be there. It says in the Shastra that after 25,000 years of Kali Yuga, Jamuna is gone. It says after 25,000 years of Kali Yuga, Ganga is gone. Which is hard to imagine in one sense. The Ganges could not be there because Ganges is so big. But it means 20,000 years from now, Kali Yuga will be so intense, they've wrecked the earth so much, that there's no Ganga anymore, because it means there's no ice in the Himalaya anymore, which means the temperature of the earth has risen too much. That's only after 20,000 years, and then there's 400,000 years after that to go. So you can imagine what it's like living in those 400,000 years. When the Bhagavatam says in the 12th canto, there's no water in the rivers, there's no trees on the earth, you can't even see the sun anymore. People are black and small and cannibalistic, and so all these things are mentioned. And we see it's all beginning to happen right now. Just like they had the terrible earthquake a couple of days ago in Nepal. Yeah, went all the way to Nepal. Delhi, but it was in Nepal. So, and then some other devotees, they pointed out that they had a big cow slaughtering festival only a month ago. So then how can you not correlate between the two? You know, slaughtering thousands of cows.
250,000
animals in that festival? Is it?
Out of it, 6,000 were buffaloes, and the rest were goats and chickens.
Cows as well? No cows at all?
That's what
the buffaloes.
Yeah. Hard to imagine no cows were slaughtered. Maybe they're not making a public thing of that, but hard to imagine no cows were slaughtered. They're slaughtering everything else then. But I mean, so much bloodshed, 250,000 animals, and they can't correlate the connection between that and earthquakes and those kind of natural disasters, because the earth will not tolerate that. So, the Ganga is extremely purifying. But she is fearful, and therefore it is said that the pure devotees, they purify the Ganga. So she is coming into this world because she is confident that the pure devotees will take bath in her water, and they will purify even her by her touch and by their touch and association. So therefore, in the songbook of the Vaishnavacharyas, is it Narottama Das Thakur? He writes that, by taking bath in the Ganges many times one becomes purified. But just by the sight of a pure devotee, one completely becomes purified immediately.
No, it's not that song. It's Yeah, it's the other song. It's the one about the Vaishnava. No, it's not that one. It's a different song. I can't remember what the song's called, but it's by Narottama. So he points out that just by association with a devotee, you become completely purified. So Ganga is relying on association of pure devotees. That in Kali Yuga it's very intense, but because Prabhupada is here and great devotees are there, then Ganges feels by their association. The pure devotee feels by the association of Ganga, they're being purified, and Ganga feels by association of the pure devotee, she's being purified. So the point is, by anyone's association, you get purified. Just by seeing Ganga, you become purified. It says, just by seeing Jamuna, you get the benefit of bathing in the Ganga. That's how powerful Jamuna is. So by taking their darshan and their association, we become extremely purified. By doing devotional service on their banks, by worshipping them, like that, we become purified. So Ganges is extremely powerful, and similarly pure devotees are extremely powerful. And by association we become purified. Any points? Yeah, she feels like that. That's how she feels. So, every pure devotee feels like that. Any other point?
See, the Sankirtan movement will be there for 10,000 years. And the Ganga will be there for 20,000
years. Yeah, after 20,000 years, Ganga is gone. So.
Or 20,000.
No. Golden period goes for another 9,500 years. Even in the golden period we see so many problems. It's already it's happening right now. It's right at this very year in history practically. You can see this where things are changing in the earth and around the planet. A lot of things. So many things are taking place. So, any points? Okay. Let's read the second paragraph. So, Joy Jagannath Prabhu, can you read the second paragraph number 2?
There are methods of pious citta or atonement, but they are inadequate to cleanse one of sinful reactions. One can be cleansed of sinful reactions only by devotional service, as stated in regard to the history of Arjuna. Only a person who has adopted complete unaware devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. It's the 6.1.15. One is under the protection of a devotee and sincerely renders service unto him. By this process of bhakti yoga, one is certainly able to counteract all sinful reactions.
Hmm. Are there any points here?
Except for devotional service, all the methods of atonement are like an adequate stadium. So I'm trying to wash off the sinful reactions, but then you know, putting mother in yourself. Devotional service, even if you again commit some sinful activities, then the process will work and you try to uproot all the sinful activities in your house.
Hmm. Any points?
It means you have to do it in Sudhu Sattva. Not only devotional service, pure devotion.
Any other points?
ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know. Everything is solved. Someone says sorry, everything is solved. All offenses are relieved. Any other points?
So,
sins are only destroyed by bhakti. Because you can perform other types of purification, it doesn't destroy sin. And it's pointed out in the pastime of Ajamil, which was there in the sixth canto, that you can do prayaschitta. Prayaschitta means atonement. It means voluntarily you take on austerity to purify you of your sin. So it says in the Shastra, in the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, that if you do one bad activity, then you do this austerity, and that will burn up your karma. It means you quicken your karma kind of thing. But bhakti is much more powerful than that. And this is pointed out in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. Because you may do the austerity, but still the desire has not left your consciousness. And we see even performing bhakti, we've been doing bhakti for years, and still the desire has not left our consciousness. So it's even difficult to remove your sinful desires by bhakti. Because our bhakti is not sufficiently intense enough, that's the point. And it's like when the fire is going, you don't want to go close to the fire, you just want to stay a distance from the fire and keep your hands warm. So most devotees are like that, factually speaking. Most of us are not, we're not that serious about our devotion or our purification. We just like to come to the temple because it's nice, the food is nice. You get nice prasad. You can eat whenever you want. If you don't feel like cooking, you just come down here. That's what everyone does anyway. And use your paper plates. Yeah, which costs the temple money, and just throw them in the bin. So no one really cares anyway. So we're just doing this very superficial type of devotional service. There's nice people here. All the devotees are nice, very nice. We have a nice social scene. And lots of kids and lots of women and lots of men you can associate with. It's all very nice. The deities are beautiful. The festivals are very sweet. And we have big kirtan festivals. Nice devotees are here now and they're doing beautiful kirtans. So we can just sit there with our hands next to the fire for years and just keep ourselves warm. But we're not intensely destroying our sinful desires. Because the sinful desires are still there within our heart. They very much have a grip on our consciousness. So the only way to purify the sinful desires is that you have to become intense in bhakti yoga. And Rupa Goswami says, he makes this point in his writings, he says, by intense devotional service, you become purified. If you're not intense about your bhakti, you don't become purified. It means that your chanting of the holy name has to be absorbed. I see most devotees chanting. It's not very attentive chanting anyway. So how do you think you'll become purified of sinful desires? It's good that you're chanting, you're becoming slowly purified, but you can do a bahu jamma kadiyata shravana kirtana. You can go for lifetimes chanting in a very unserious way, and you can gradually purify it, but it will take a long, long time. But if you want to destroy the sinful desires in your heart, you have to become very intense and very attentive and very sincere in your devotional service. Then you become purified. That is the process. So bhakti is extremely powerful, but you have to absorb yourself in it. And our problem is we're not so absorbed. Our mind still wanders a lot. Any points?
It's scary.
What's that?
It's scary.
It is scary? You're okay. You just keep worshiping Tulsi and then you'll be okay. Yes.
We get a desire to go deeper into the holy name, but it's so easy to get distracted. We can get that desire, I want to go deeper into the chanting of the holy name, but it's so easy just to get distracted without realizing it.
Have you read Harinam Chintamani? You know the book? You know? So you should study that book. It describes all these things. that overcome distraction and things like that. You know what it says you should do if you're distracted while you're chanting? It says you should chant in a dark room where there's no distractions. Or blindfold yourself. It says that. I'm a bit worried because I think you'll actually do these things. But it says those things. It says you should go into a dark room and just chant by yourself.
So even in the dark, you can chant by yourself.
It means you should take guidance from senior devotees. Because otherwise you might do things which are not so... The best thing, it means for us not to be distracted, we should chant in the temple room in the morning. Because the temple room means it's a very undistracted atmosphere. Even there you can become distracted, but if you chant, like when I chant, I don't chant in the temple room very often because I'm not in Melbourne that much. But if I chant in the temple room, I find it quite undistracting because I look around, most of the devotees are chanting seriously. You just have to absorb your consciousness. That's the main point. So, any other points?
There's a similarity here to first canto also. I don't remember the exact verse, but I think it comes near the Ashtaprayashya Mantra. So there was one mentions that the water of the Ganges can purify one with prolonged use.
Yeah, it's in, we said before you came in, there's a song by Narottama Das Thakur in the song of the Vaishnava Charas where he says that. Okay, there could be a verse there in that canto as well. Anything else? Like a cloth woven of threads extending for its length and breadth, this entire universe, in all its latitude and longitude, is situated under different potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Shiva is the incarnation of the Lord, and thus he represents the super soul in the embodied soul. He can sustain your forceful waves on his head. So, the purport and the verse speak about Shiva Tattva. Very important for devotees to understand Lord Shiva's position. Many non-devotees don't understand. They might be Shaivites, they might be followers of Shiva, but they don't understand his position. They don't understand the proper Siddhanta or Tattva about Shiva's position. Whereas devotees, they understand Shiva's position properly. We understand Shiva in connection to Krishna, in connection to Bhagavan. Also, Shiva is called Bhagavan, but he is not the supreme or the Swayam Bhagavan or the original personality. He is a servant of the original personality. He's Mahadev. He's the greatest of the gods. He's much greater than all the demigods, much more powerful than Indra. There's pastimes in Mahabharata where he freezes Indra. Much more powerful than Brahma, much more powerful. Brihad Bhagavatamrita points this out. So he is much more powerful, but still, he is not the Supreme Lord himself. So only the devotees, the Vaishnavas, who study the Bhagavatam, understand Bhagavat philosophy, they understand Shiva's position properly. And we respect Shiva. We give him all respect. I personally pray to him every day. We give him respect, but we do not understand him outside of his actual position. Which means Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. He is a great devotee, but we don't see him beyond that. We see him as a powerful god on the level of Vishnu or Krishna. And his original form, he is Sadashiva. In his original form, he is Narayan himself, he is God. But when he comes into the material world, he becomes somewhat... He touches the material energy and then he becomes slightly transformed by that touch. So therefore, he's no longer Vishnu Tattva, he's his own Tattva called Shiva Tattva. So we have to understand his position properly. Any points? What is it?
The word that represents the super soul.
In the Sanskrit, is that what you're saying?
Translation.
Yeah, I saw the translation. What's the point?
Not sure. Understand the purport. In one sense, not different. But he always kept understanding that it is still a trend. In actual sense, they are two different personalities.
Yeah, so. So he's practically as powerful. It means he's so powerful, he's almost like super soul. It means he understands everything that's going on in the universe simultaneously. That's super soul. That's Paramatma. That's God. So he's practically on that level. He practically knows everything that's going on simultaneously in this universe. That's how powerful he is. So it's saying that it's like. A pure devotee by Krishna's mercy could also understand practically everything like that too, if Krishna allowed him to. So Krishna can give him that potency to practically be like that. Not that he is the super soul, but practically the potency is there. He's almost God, that's the point. And the original form, he is God. And in this form, he's almost God. That's how powerful he is. If you read Nectar Devotion, it says the five qualities he has, which separates him from everyone else. And then there are five further qualities which Vishnu exhibits.
See, Lord Shiva is the expansion of Sankarsha, right? And the Narayan comes from Sankarsha too, right?
He's almost as powerful as. I've already explained that, so I can't keep going with the angels. It should be clear by now. A lot of you have been studying here for 10 years, so you should have it. You should already understand. I don't have to explain it every canto, these things. So. After saying this, Bhagiratha satisfied Lord Shiva by performing austerities. O King Parikshit, the Lord Shiva was very quickly satisfied with Bhagiratha. So what is Lord Shiva's service?
He's an elixir.
Yeah, that, but what's his actual service? Yeah, but that's not his main service. What's his main service? His main service is to bring everyone to Krishna. Therefore, he has his own sampradaya. He's the head of a sampradaya. He's the guru. He's the acharya. He's the guru. So his main service, he delivers those in the mode of ignorance, but he delivers all those not in the mode of ignorance also. His main desire is to reunite everyone with Krishna, and that is his seva. And if we pray to him, that's what he will do. Because he is the lord of the ahankara, which means the false ego. So by worshipping him, he can help us reduce our false ego so that we can approach Krishna. That's his main function. For the devotees, that's how we pray to him. We don't pray to him for other things. We pray to him to help us to reach Krishna. And if you pray to him, you'll get his mercy and he will help you to get Krishna. Reduce your false ego. Any points? Because Nityananda Prabhu is the Adi Guru, the original spiritual master.
when King Bhagiratha approached Lord Shiva and requested him to sustain the forceful waves of the Ganges, Lord Shiva accepted the proposal by saying, "Let it be so." Then with great attention he sustained the Ganges on his head, for the water of the Ganges is purifying, having emanated from the toes of Lord Vishnu. Not specifically. I mean, one thing is that Krishna likes to glorify the devotee, so quite often he lets the devotee do things instead of him. Like, he could have won the battle of Kurukshetra, but he let Arjuna do it to glorify Arjuna. So Lord Shiva's saying, of course he can do it, but he can allow Shiva to do it to get the fame and the potency and be respected. And to glorify Shiva's power and potency. I mean, stopping the Ganga in your head. You know, it's super powerful.
Also, it's an opportunity for the highest devotee, the mercy of the Lord, that he's giving his
many pastimes. Anything else? The great and saintly king Bhagiratha brought the Ganges, which can deliver all the fallen souls, to that place on earth where the bodies of his forefathers lay burnt to ashes. Bhagiratha mounted a swift chariot and drove before Mother Ganges, who followed him, purifying many countries, until they reached the ashes of Bhagiratha's forefathers, the sons of Sagara, who were thus sprinkled with water from the Ganges. Because the sons of Sagara Maharaj had offended a great personality, the heat of their bodies had increased, and they were burnt to ashes. But simply by being sprinkled with water from the Ganges, all of them became eligible to go to the heavenly planets. What then is to be said of those who use the water of Mother Ganges to worship her? So Prabhupada points out in the purport that the devotees, when they go to the Ganga, they take the water of the Ganges and they offer it back to the Ganga. So what are we doing? Nothing. Because it's not our water, it's her water. So Prabhupada gives the example, just like the kid, the child. The father gives some money, or the mother gives some money. The father goes to work, right? The mother gets the money. Right? The mother gives the money to the kid. The kid goes to the shop, buys a present for the father, and gives the present to the father. Right? So when Father's Day comes and the father gets the present, the father feels love from the child. But actually the child did nothing really. I mean, made the endeavor, showed the love, showed the affection. But all the energy is coming from the Father. So Prabhupada points this out. Everything we do for Krishna, it doesn't really mean anything, in the sense that it is insignificant. And Prabhupada points this out. Everything that we offer to Krishna, for example, in this world, in terms of bhoga, or we cook, you know, the most opulent offerings, but compared to what he eats in the spiritual world, it is insignificant. It's only Krishna tasting the bhakti, really, that's the essence. Because you can offer Krishna rice and flour and everything in this world, but it doesn't taste anything like the rice and flour in the spiritual world. Because in the spiritual world, everything has another level of taste which cannot be compared to this world. So Krishna really can't relish what's in this world. He can only relish the bhakti of the devotee. Just like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments in the 10th canto, in one of the purports, he says the aroma of Tulsi in the spiritual world cannot be smelt in this world. We don't even smell what Tulsi actually smells like. So all the aromas, all the tastes, all the flavors, all the colors, everything in the spiritual world, we can't even imagine what it's actually like. So Krishna doesn't really relish anything in this world anyway. we get proud because we give the temple $5,000. But that's just—it's nothing in Krishna. In Krishna's creation, it's nothing. So, what is Krishna interested in? It is the bhakti, or the endeavor, or the sacrifice, or the love, or the affection. That's what Krishna is attracted to, because nothing that we can offer Krishna is actually of real value, except the bhakti. So Prabhupada says, it's not the Ganges water, you go to the Ganga, you pick up the water, you offer it back to the Ganga, what have you done? She's tasting or relishing or connecting or reciprocating with what's in your heart. But what you've actually done, there's nothing significant there. Or you take a flame and you offer it to the sun. You know, what's the sun going to do with your candle? There's no significance there. It's the bhakti that counts. That's the point. Any points? So who was he?
Adi Shankara.
Yeah.
Shivam,
Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva. Yeah. Same person. Same Shiva. Yeah, they got purified. Because if you approach bhakti or the holy name or the Ganges with material desires, you'll get your material desires fulfilled. If you approach with devotion, then you can go to Goloka Vrindavan.
But
and
if devotion was performed
by the leader. Anyway, technicalities. Any other point? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.